Hey there, folks, it's Richard. I'm just cutting in real quick before Brad and I get started to tell you that Giallo Meltdown 2, a book by me, is now available on Amazon.com in streaming or downloading form. No, wait, paper or electronic. It's a whole book about me watching over 200 Giallo films, and I would love if you checked it out. Hey, let's get on with this show, because I don't like podcasts with advertisements at the beginning, just like this one.
Statistically speaking, one of the most impressive records of failure is destined to be broken. 84 failures. A fantastic record. Incredible. A record like that couldn't possibly last. I could just sit in my office and wait for the criminal to show up.
Please don't do that.
Oh, no. I'll take a very personal interest in your case.
Everything is ready, my darling. Do not be afraid. Soon we'll be together again.
Hello and welcome to Hello, This is the Doomed Show. I am Richard.
It's Brad.
Folks, we are tuning back in. We took just a few minutes break. We were just finishing up our discussion of The Cat of Nine Tails.
Mm-hmm.
And right before that, literally minutes before that, we talked about frickin' Bird with a Crystal Plumage. And then we took just a little break to have a sip of water. And that was about 220 episodes ago.
Wow.
Let me make sure. Folks, we took a break from doing the third film in Dario Argento's Animal Trilogy. And we didn't mean for it to be a big break.
Mm-hmm.
But this is episode 250-something. And Brad and I did the Animal Trilogy Part 1 on episode 56, so...
Wow.
It was just about 200 episodes ago. But hey, better late than never, right?
Yeah, we left just enough time so that they would think that we weren't going
to
do it.
That's right. That's right. You have time to see the movie, because this one's still weirdly hard to get a hold of. We've had multiple editions of both Bird of the Crystal Plumage and Cat of Nine Tails. But this one, I call it a straggler.
It is.
It's kind of a mythical film for some reason. It's probably because of its distribution rights getting all tangled up. It's sitting in a vault somewhere. Trying to remember the film company that made it.
Oh, I know.
Tried to bury it.
Maya.
Yeah, well, Maya is the version I'm watching it on.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm wondering about the company credits. Like the... Because a major American studio actually...
Universal.
That's it. Yes, thank you. Universal Pictures, they're the ones who distributed it. Paramount distributed it. They've buried it, I think. I think they've made it difficult for us to get this damn thing.
Yeah.
You can get this. The Maya DVD is the one I have. It is pretty much out of print. However, Shameless has the 40th edition Blu-ray. But I have never seen that for sale anywhere I know about.
I have the Shameless DVD as well as the Maya DVD.
Okay.
But I do not have the Blu-ray.
Yeah, the Shameless is hard to get. the Maya is getting hard to get, but I'm going to go outside of Amazon spectrum here because you know what? Sometimes they don't do us any favors. I can't wait to edit this part where I actually shop. Here we go.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I've looked up on eBay for you.
Oh, yes. If you can get it on eBay, folks, do it there because, you know, I like Diabolik.
Oh, no. I'd pick Diabolik over eBay for sure.
Spasmo, are you a cat of nine tails? Are you hearing this?
I am.
So they say the Blu-ray's out of stock. That's not good.
eBay has the Blu-ray with 99.9% positive feedback.
Oh, nice.
Free 3-day shipping for $29.99.
Folks, do it. That's what I would do. I should probably upgrade. I do like the Maya DVD. Which version did you watch for this particular viewing, sir?
The Shameless, because I do believe the Shameless is better than the Maya.
Well, I should probably try to track that down then.
Best as I remember, and it's been a long time, my history with this film was I watched it online.
Yeah.
And I want to say it was YouTube. And then Maya had a DVD, so I ordered it. And as soon as I ordered it, Shameless announced a DVD. And this was back when I would immediately buy Gialli for any reason.
Wow.
So we double dip pretty quick on that. It's the most complete version, supposedly. And there are some scenes that like half of them don't look quite as good. Still much better than like a VHS.
Right, right.
And then the next frame all of a sudden is like better.
Damn.
It's a good looking DVD, so it's not Blu-ray. I don't know what the Blu-ray looks like.
Yeah, that's the thing. I've never seen that frickin' Blu-ray. I've always done the DVD. All I know is the bootleg I had originally, it was very dark, and even with the brightness on my TV turned up all the way, I could not see the end.
Yeah.
The whole cataclysmic car crash ending.
Mm.
Couldn't see it, so I was very, very disappointed. That was a big bummer for me. Yes, I'm quite happy with the Maya, and I will be checking out that frickin' Shameless.
Yeah, and the Blu-ray is $30, and it is region-free, according to eBay.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm still that guy who has no region-free Blu-ray player. I'm depending on the kindness of strangers,
mm-hmm.
as I do. As you can probably guess, we're going to spoil this whole movie, so please, if you haven't seen Four Flies and Grey Velvet, give it a watch. You will not regret it.
That's right.
I'm going to play a trailer. It's probably got some pumping heartbeats and some Ennio Morricone. This is when Ennio Morricone and our pal Argento butted heads for the first time. They'd been doing so good, and it caused a little bit of a scandal that people couldn't believe that Argento had dared to question the maestro. And he would, of course, go on to work with Goblin, and the rest is history. Yeah.
An evening of darkness becomes an eternity of terror and suspense as a killer stalks the streets of a city in search of unsuspecting victims to quench his never-ending thirst for blood.
With the police. They found the maid with her throat cut.
I would definitely describe it as an extreme case of homicidal mania. The patient was here for 3 years. It was our opinion that the patient was completely cured.
I could tell you now, but I won't. I'll wait. Who's going to help you?
An innocent man becomes a target of insanity as he steps into the crosshairs of a homicidal maniac with a need for revenge.
Congratulations. You guessed right.
The killer's a homicidal paranoid. Cases like that commit the most horrendous crimes for what appear to be the most insignificant reasons.
Stop acting like a baby. Stop crying. You hear? I never want to see you cry. What have you done now? you'll end up in an asylum. Asylum! Asylum!
Maybe it's all a bad dream. I'm scared.
What's the matter? What's happening?
Look, I'm waiting for someone. Now you go out that door and you run.
Four Flies on Gray Velvet. Join us for a journey into the dark and endless caverns of a sick and twisted mind. Join us for a journey into living hell.
Okay, that was a sort of a trailer or a total trailer. I don't even know what I played right there because I'm a bad boy and didn't look it up. I do have the plot synopsis from IMDb because I haven't seen a VHS tape for Four Flies and Gray Velvet. I like to read from the VHS tapes. I like to see how these things were marketed here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here we go. Scott Calvin has been a humble Santa Claus for 8 years, but it might come to an end if he doesn't find a Mrs. Claus. Of course, that's the Santa Claus 2. That's the plot from that.
That's going to be our Christmas episode.
Exactly. No, seriously. A musician is stalked by an unknown homicidal maniac who blackmails him for the accidental killing of another stalker. Whoa. There's no spoilers in that. Because that's just misleading. I like it.
Uh-huh.
Perfect. Oh, boy. So this movie opens, and I got to say, can the drummer get some?
Can the drummer get some?
Folks, I love drummers. I know a few drummers, and their brains are totally different, just like bass players are totally different from every other kind of musician. Drummers be crazy.
Drummers be crazy,
and we got Michael Brandon, who is he an American dude? He is. He's a Brooklynite.
Yeah, he is actually in one of your favorite Marvel movies.
Holy shit, I had no idea that was him.
I did not know it either.
He's in Captain America, the First Avenger.
He is.
Somebody get that kid a sandwich.
Well, Lieta will be very glad to know that.
Mm-hmm.
That's like her favorite. That and the first Thor are her favorites. That's brilliant. So yeah, Michael Brandon, American dude, he's great in this. Argento was quite taken with him and thought, you know, hey, this guy reminds me of me, which is terrifying. But we got this drummer, and he's at his sesh. He's jamming. Mm-hmm. He's jamming with his fellow musicians. And I'm going to do a quick impression of the singer in his band. That's how he sings. He's the worst. I want to fire him, but I have no power in this band. I'm very low on the power totem pole. But he sees a fly skeeto. He's trying to kill this fly skeeto, and while this fly skeeto is flying in his face, he's also seeing a stalker out the window, because they're recording their session in a record store / music store, and then later they're recording in a studio, but it's in the record store he's being stalked. And then you see this movie's got heart.
It really does.
A pumping heart. This is a very gimmicky credit sequence. I love it. I adore it. I think it's wonderful.
So good.
After they're done, and Michael Brandon, our drummer boy, he's Roberto in this movie. When Roberto he's running out the door, his buddy, the keyboardist, who I believe is supposed to be gay and has a crush on him, chases him out the door and apologizes for playing so shitty. He's just off his game. And Roberto's like, who's going to notice? This music's so crazy. Would anyone even notice? Just you know, hit your cues, man. And then he's like, do I have to remind you? Our singer sounds like this. So Roberto finally confronts this stalker. This guy's been following him, so he follows him in reverse. And they end up in an old theater. And Lieta's like, hold up. Is this a secret New Year's Eve movie?
Mm.
All these revelers are coming out of this old theater at night. And they're covered in confetti. And they look drunk. There's musicians leaving. So the stalker goes in there. Roberto follows him. And the guy pulls a knife like, get away from me, man. And Roberto says, I'm sick of seeing your stupid face. And when the stalker is holding the knife on him, I said, Brad, this is a prequel to Knives Out.
Knives Out.
Yep. Speaking of Marvel.
Knives Chow.
Hey, Knives Chow. Speaking of the MCU. So we see the freaky mask. We got this weird Cupid doll mask on our actual killer here, who is conveniently photographing Roberto accidentally stabbing this guy. This might lead to some blackmail. Can't say.
But it's a pretty good assumption.
After Roberto kills, quote unquote, the guy, or quote unquote, kills the guy, that smooth ass Morricone lullaby weird song, that's my favorite piece of music from Morricone, starts playing. And we see the upscale suburban lives of where our pal Roberto lives. He's living high on the hog. So they've got high rises and everything, and it's beautiful buildings, but it just reeks of like this gentrified hipster living space where he and his wife live.
Right.
We see a dozing kitty, and this dozing kitty is a character that is my favorite character. And then Roberto's in bed with his Mimsy farmer. She's not an actual farmer, but she does have a name of Nina. This is my favorite hair on Mimsy Farmer. She has the best hair in this one.
You are correct, sir.
Yes. So she gets a call, mystery call, and they just hang up. And you can tell they have marital strife.
Mm.
And it's just, you know, things are tense immediately, but we don't know why. Other than Roberto's a murderer.
Oh, well.
But he reads about this corpse in the paper. So the murder did happen, but they don't know who the guy was yet. And meanwhile, the mailman is being harassed by Mimsy, a.k.a. Nina, and their nosy neighbor, because this guy, this strange guy who lives in their apartment complex, he gets pornography in the mail, and the mailman has been delivering it to the wrong address.
Uh-huh.
It is a subplot that barely fits and barely leads to one of the most red herrings of all time, but, you know, whatever.
Well, you know.
But Roberto does get the ID card of the dead man, so he knows who this guy is now, at least by name. And that night, it's party time. We got guests talking about dirty stories, talking about cannibal chefs putting paprika on their corpses.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got another guest named Andrea. Or no, somebody. I get mixed up. There's this Andrea guy,
mm-hmm.
and he tells stories. He looks vaguely like mustachioed Elliot Gould. He looks like mustachioed Elliot Gould. His name's Andrea. But the actor is Stefano Sataflores.
Sounds about right.
Have I seen him in something else? Maybe. Not sure. But he talks about a beheading in Saudi Arabia where they kill this guy. And, of course, this will lead to Roberto having multiple dreams about this beheading in Saudi Arabia. And then in the records, Roberto finds the photographs of the killing of the stalker, which he hides. So the killer has been inside the house now. And then he wakes up from his beheading dream to get strangled. And I wrote LOL BRB.
Yeah.
And the killer whispers in a maniacal voice, I could kill you now, but I won't.
But I could.
He could if he would, but he can't, so he won't.
Goodbye.
Mimsy gets up, our pal Mimsy, and she's like, what's wrong with you? And he's like, nothing. So he tells her the whole story, fesses up completely, and the maid is very conveniently absorbing all of his information.
Wow.
She's going to try to blackmail the blackmailer.
This has two of Elizabeth's favorite maxims.
Oh.
Maxim number one is never try to blackmail the blackmailer.
Nice.
I mean, the killer, I'm sorry.
Dude, either way, don't do it.
Yeah, don't blackmail the bad people.
I can do that. This maid is played by Marissa Fabry. She was in The Weekend Murders, which is ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
She's also in Rabid Dogs, one of Mario Bava's final movies.
Still haven't watched it.
Oh man, it's great. It gets really sleazy, but it hangs in there. It doesn't cross the line for me.
I tried to watch it one time and it didn't go well, so yeah. There will always be a Bava film that I have not seen.
I highly don't recommend the version that Lamb Bava touched up.
Yeah, I've heard that's terrible.
I love Lamb Bava so much, but him filming scenes in 2004 for a film from 1974 ain't happening. It just didn't.
Terrible idea.
Yeah, it did not work out at all. Don't recommend it. But she is going to get murdered. Oh, yeah. Boy. Mimsy doesn't believe Roberto at all. She's like, you're whatever. You're full of shit. You're crazy. But then she thinks it's just a dream. But then she finds the wallet on her dresser of the dead man. And she tries to get him to run away. But no. He's got to go see God, a.k.a. Godfrey.
Mm-hmm.
As we all know, Bud Spencer is God.
We all know Bud Spencer thought he was God.
Well, yes. Who am I to argue with that? But he has to talk to the professor first, which the professor is played by the freaking gay cameraman, the gay stereotype from freaking Case of the Bloody Iris.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's not the only gay stereotype in this.
Oh, no. He's one of three. I think the only one who's maybe not a stereotype is the keyboardist who has a crush on Roberto. This is Oreste Leonello. He's a Greek-born actor, and I love him so much in Case of the Bloody Iris. I feel like he's one of those, it's a paycheck kind of guy, you know, like, he had a type that he liked to play. But the professor is certainly one of his best characters ever. He's very fun. Mm-hmm. He's very mannered. One of those bums who's probably a bum by choice, like a hobo who decides to adopt this persona. He may have even been a professor at one time, and now he's
possible
and living on the streets. So he leads him to God, and our pal Godfrey, Bud Spencer, is fishing.
God! Hallelujah! Hallelujah! He says, Godfrey. Godfrey, not God. What the hell is wrong with Godfrey? Think of something else to call me, something less appropriate. If you're gonna call me God, at least you could call me God Almighty.
God Almighty?
What do you want?
He's very upset about the state of the environment and that fish are all disgusting and tiny now. And he says that you catch one, you want to nurse it back to health. But he introduces him to Jerkoff, his parrot named Jerkoff. And then they talk and Roberto tells him all about his troubles of murdering this man and that he's being blackmailed and he thinks it's an inside job, but he doesn't know what they want. Do they want money? It's like, I don't know what they want. And he tells him to get a freaking private eye to follow him around, a private dick, if you will. And he tells him to hire the professor for 1,000 lira a day, excuse me, 1,005 a day to follow him around so they can, you know, see if he's in any real danger.
Exactly.
Back at home in the rain, Roberto attacks the mailman, thinking he's the killer. And the mailman's like, what do you got against mail carriers?
It's hilarious.
And as Elizabeth says, never try to blackmail the killer because the maid tries to blackmail the killer. And the killer, we find out, much like the killer in Tenebrae, is haunted by a traumatic past. And, it's time for fun in the park, Brad. Let's go to this set piece.
Yes, sir.
We'll have some carousel music and some jaunty times with
jaunty time.
Hippies making out. So our buddy the maid is waiting for her Monet. And of course, music stops and they use that camera trick where they make everybody disappear. Except the camera moves, so every time it's supposed to be a seamless shot of someone disappearing, the background and the camera move to kind of reveal that it was just, they just stopped filming for a few seconds. God bless them for trying.
They did try.
And then she gets chased through the hedge maze to death.
Crazy.
She tries to call for help, and the hippie couple who are making out are now outside the park, and they try to help her, but they're too little too late, and we don't see her actually getting killed. We just see her scraping her nails on the stone wall.
Yeah.
It's a very bloodless death.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a little shocking. I thought they were going to see some blood.
Yeah, and I don't really know why she went through that crevice, because it didn't gain her anything.
It did not. Especially when it was so freaking tight, dude. It was a tight squeeze. Next thing you know, they have another party. Mimsy's very concerned about the maid being disappeared, but then her hot cousin shows up. I wrote her down as a sister, but this is a cousin named Dahlia.
And you know who she's played by?
She's played by an actress named Francine Rachette or Rosette.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Don't know if I know her from anything.
You know her from something in real life. She is married to Donald Sutherland.
Wow.
And has been since 72, I think, is what I read.
Good for them. That's incredible.
Yeah.
It makes me want to see The Disappearance.
She's foxy.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, foxy.
1972 is The Disappearance with Sutherland and Francine. I want to see that. That's incredible.
It's good stuff.
So yeah, her hot sister's there. Mm-hmm. And I'm confused as to what's going to happen here. But I know that they're going to hook up as soon as good old Mimsy's out of the way.
Exactly.
Andrea tells a perverted Frankenstein story, which nobody wanted to hear.
Nobody.
They find out that the maid is dead, and then Roberto has another beheading dream. Every time he has this dream, the sword is just about to land on the victim. It's about to cut their head off. It gets closer and closer each time.
Painful.
This time he gets a creepy note, and in my version, the creepy note is in Italian, and I cannot read it. But we cut to the dead man, the stalker who we stabbed earlier, eating spaghetti, or as I wrote, Paschetti.
Paschetti.
So the killer faked his own death and has been one of the blackmailers. And now he is blackmailing the killer. So that's twice.
Yes. Elizabeth points that out.
Dude, as she should. This is awful. This is as bad as calling someone and saying, I know who the killer is, but I don't want to say over the phone. We can talk later.
Bingo.
I did write that he's blackmailing the BM, which sounds like bowel movement.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. We find even more childhood trauma from the killer's brain. Now, this killer is in a padded cell, and there's a voice, presumably the father of the killer, going, I wanted a son, not a wimp. You're a wimp. I'm going to beat you.
Wimp.
Yep. They show a dead animal, and it's, you know, a dead animal hanging from a string. And that's when Roberto's cat goes missing. Yikes. The cute kitty is now in danger. So dead man, our stalker, is now an actual dead man. He gets murderated by the killer for trying to blackmail the killer. He gets killed with a semi-priceless antique. I called it El Cabong.
El Cabong.
Roberto has a car montage. He finally goes to hire the private Dick, and he's driving his car around town. It's a great edited scene where instead of seeing him go up the stairs, we see a POV of him going up the stairs quickly with the sound of the engine. So it's like he's driving up the stairs, which I don't recommend. And he meets our pal, Rosio, the gay detective. This is absolutely a stereotype, and I can't help but praise this character because he's utterly brilliant. I don't praise the stereotyping, but I do praise that he's one of the coolest people in the frickin' movie.
I told Elizabeth that I would watch a series of films of him solving or not solving crimes, mysteries, because he's awesome.
He has a Roberto buy him a feast. He guilt trips him into putting him on his expense account immediately and has like five sandwiches and a steak and some eggs and a frickin', you know, a few beers at the bar. We see J and B at the bar, so this is a giallo.
It's a giallo for sure.
So he tells him about his perfect record of failure. He says, 81 cases of utter failure, not a single case solved. He says, by those odds, I have to win. I could sit around and not investigate this at all. And Roberto says, please don't do that.
Yeah.
Oh, man, remember when Argento was funny when his jokes landed? Come on.
Yeah, I mean, and there are gay stereotypes in all four of his first gialli.
Yeah, it's wild. So he gets back home after hiring a Rosio. Good old Falehi, the Italian actor, is one of the cops.
Mm-hmm.
And he's questioning Mimsy. She tells him, I can't stay here anymore. I'm out. I'm going to let these cops take me away, and then I'm going to stay away. So that's when cousin Dahlia is babysitting our pal Roberto. And like a baby, he gets a bath. And I said, we've all been in this situation. Am I right, fellas? So she's bathing him, and he manages to fake his own death and scare her and then con her into bathing and having sex with him in the bath. It's so crazy.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a good dude.
No. Roberto is an egomaniac and a frickin' adulterer and a jackass, and yet I can't help but want to know what's going to happen to him. I am invested in this story, sure, even though I dislike this man. So Rosio stops by after the bathing, and he mistakes Dahlia for Roberto's wife, like you would. And then they go to get the evidence. So he has all of the things he's been collecting, and they find the dead cat. So our poor kitty, very fake cat, thank God, is in a plastic bag, looking dumb, struggling. I'm a dead cat. So then he dreams again about the beheading again. Oh my God.
Just keeps going.
Orozio interviews the psychiatrist, who lays out all of the facts about a certain person with mental problems, who's like a psychopath and everything. Mm-hmm. But we don't know who it is. It's like mystery. Then we get a private dicking montage where he goes completely freaking wild interviewing people around town, and he meets the other gay stereotype in the movie. This guy who just lives in an apartment, dresses semi-provocatively, and waves himself with a fan to cool off. And they are just on fire together. It's great. I don't know what he learns from this guy, but he definitely is ready to crack this case. And that's when he sees his prey. Orozio sees his prey and follows him on the subway, loses him, ends up in the men's room, which is not where we need to go.
Right.
He gets bonked on the head, and then he gets poison directly injected through his chest nipple into his heart.
Terrible.
But he does get rewarded because the killer hisses at him, "You did it. Congratulations. You figured it out."
Yeah, you guessed right.
After he dies, he is dead. Now, Roberto's at home again.
Waiting to get killed.
Yeah, waiting to die. Andrea, our Elliot Gould impersonator, gives him no information. He just says, "Dude, you better get the fuck out of here." Roberto initially refuses, and he will continue to refuse, and he finds out about Orozio's death and decides to go to the funeral parlor to pick out his own coffin.
Mm-hmm.
No, it is a funeral director's convention. Lots of nice merchandise.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when he meets up with God and the professor, and the reason God picked this place is a meeting to help him get more in touch with his own mortality so that he could
prepare for death.
Yes, and realize the gravity of a situation.
Exactly.
This is great stuff. The professor's running around goofing off, stealing cigarettes from people.
Mm.
There's all this like ghoulish comedy with all the deluxe coffins. It's very fun. I love this scene. And Mimsy's cousin, she can't bear to deal with anymore. She's packing. She's out of there.
Hello there, young man.
It's King Ding Dong.
King who?
Ding Dong. Don't you see him?
No.
But to us, it's Ding Dong.
To kids, I'm just as real as the good taste of that chocolatey icing and creamy filling.
What's wrong with Mom? Now do you see him?
I think so, Jimmy.
Hostess Ding Dongs, fruit pies and Twinkies, with Hostess tasting is believing.
So as our pal cousin is packing up, she hears the voice. She's thinking about that childhood trauma too, adding her to the frickin' suspect list as well. She can't call Roberto because he's jamming too hard with his boys, and the singer's going, That's when she tries to hide. The killer pulls the plug on the lights, and she crawls into the tenebrae room of the house. And then she gets inside the lion, the witch, and the wardrobe. The killer lets her think that the killer has left, and so she comes out and gets totally myrtillated.
Myrtillated.
A little slash on her head and goes bump, bump, bump down the stairs.
Yeah, a little bit of Fulci sneaking in there.
Damn. So they take her body to the convention center where they can view it.
Of course.
It's beautiful. The cops want to do a funny test on her retinas. Mimsy ain't having it. She's too traumatized. But they want to look at that eyeball because it's recently been discovered in the 1870s that they think that if you look at the image from a retina of a murdered person, you'll see their image, so you can catch the killer. But unfortunately, it's 1970s. Doesn't work.
No.
So what do they see? They see four flies. The image on her eye is four flies on gray velvet, the title of the movie.
Tricky.
I wrote, it looks like four guys and flag football.
Yes.
Roberto buys a gun, finally. I'm not a gun person, but this is the time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the most wonderfully, quaint, beautiful packaging ever. It's like, it looks like it came out of a vending machine.
Mm-hmm.
And Godfrey is there saying, dude, I actually approve of you buying this. And he says, you ever see the movie Straw Dogs? So now we're going to roll out the suspects. This is the night. This is when shit's going to go down. We got funky drumming. It's just beautiful. Mm-hmm. We got piano plonking away. Just those dark, dark, freaking low keys. Bop, 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 bop. And we see all the red herrings, all the suspects, mm-hmm. even the nosy neighbor lady, gay keyboardist, Andrea, some other chick that I think is named Maria. I forget. Someone apparently was in love with Roberto. And he was like, whoa, she was? It's like, yeah, dude. I'm like, who the fuck is Maria? I don't know. She's credited, though, this Maria person, as Laura Trochel. And they literally say the name Maria, and then that's it. Don't know who she is. Anyway, glad I mentioned her.
Yes.
Roberto falls asleep on the couch and finally finishes the dream with the actual beheading this time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And now he's waiting. He's waiting. He's waiting. He's got the gun. He's got the lights. He's going to either A, turn the lights on when he hears something, or electrocute himself. Leota's like, what is he doing? he strips the wires and he's just holding them bare in his hands. Like, yeah, you're going to turn the lights on, all right.
Yep.
And the light's going to be your hair on fire.
Boy.
So he turns the lights on and Mimsy bursts in and he's like, what are you doing here? I told you to leave. But then he sees that pendant swinging on her neck and he realizes she is the one who killed her own cousin's sister. And they talk it out after he slaps her across the room. Yikes. He beats her.
He does. This is another one of Elizabeth's maxims. As soon as she's identified as the killer, she's just crazy.
Yep.
Like, yeah. Uncontainably crazy. Crazy voice, crazy eyes, crazy face.
Dude, this is why you hire Mimsy Farmer. She's going to get wild. She's going to get totally wild.
Going to get cranked up.
Oh, my God. So she has her big monologue, which on my DVD switches between Italian and English almost seamlessly. There are probably parts of this speech that were never dubbed into English, which is fine. I can read subtitles. Sure. But yeah, her father beat her because she wasn't a boy. He raised her as a boy and was just unaccepting of her. Drove her completely insane and she went into an insane asylum. Mm-hmm. And he died. He did the biggest crime of all, the biggest sin of all, which is dying before she could kill him herself. So she went looking for a man who was just like Daddy, and sure enough, she found the ultimate in Roberto, who's just like her father.
Yep, great.
She nonchalantly shoots him in the shoulder with this magical special effects shot, where we actually see the bullet flying through the air, piercing his shoulder. It's brilliant. It is freaking fantastic, and then... Again, while she's talking, she gestures and nonchalantly shoots him in the leg this time. So you're turning your drummer into a synthesizer player by doing that. Yeah, I said that.
Yeah, you did.
And that's when Godfrey runs in and screams, God loves you! And knocks the gun out of her hands and she runs out the door, jumps in the car, speeds away, and gets into a horrific car accident.
While
that beautiful lullaby music plays, and we see the quote-unquote scientific camera that shoots at a super, super high frame rate.
Mm-hmm.
So they can do ultra slow motion. And they scared the shit out of the real Mimsy Farmer. She was...
They really did.
She thought she was going to die or be blinded. So they're like, yeah, get in the car and crash it. She's like, no, I'm not doing that. And then they said, okay, we're going to smash this windshield in your face, but it's going to be in slow motion. Don't worry about it. She's like, no, I'm not doing that. And they said, well, we'll put a layer of glass in front of you, and then we'll smash the layer of glass in front of that layer of glass. And she looks terrified.
Yeah, she certainly does. And she should.
Because. Yep.
Yeah.
This is like Carlo Rambaldi's cousin or something. No, I don't know who did the effects, but...
But they're in Italy, who are not exactly known for safety precautions or, you know, et cetera.
Once again, we have this epic destruction of the killer. The killer meets their fate in this totally Grand Guignol frickin' stage type thing, and it's great.
Horrific, yes.
Argento, I believe, was trying to finish off his career in a big way as a giallo man. And of course, we all know that he would be back. He would go make an art film, and he would be immediately back with Deep Red. And thank God he came back, but you know.
Certainly.
Let's look at some of this crew. Look at some of this crew members. Good old Salvatore Argento.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he's, he's Dario's father, produced this. He would produce everything up until, everything of Argento's up until Tenebrae, and then he passed away, or retired, and then passed away. Got cinematography by Franco D. Giacomo, who did The Good and the Bad and the Ugly. Oh my God. That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
What else did he do? Oh, Amityville 2, The Possession. Wow.
Dang.
Good on you, brother. Oh my God, he did The Killer Must Kill Again. Wow.
Mm.
Not a favorite.
We never finished it. Like, the disc from Netflix was messed up, so we didn't see the end.
I will not say that you lucked out. It is absolutely not a favorite of mine, and it does it punishes you for watching it with some rape, so I don't like that.
Oh, good.
But I do believe it is worth a look at least once. He also was the lighting cameraman on Who Saw Her Die, so that's nice.
Ah, that's a better one.
That's nice. And, of course, we talked a little bit about Ennio Morricone, you know, legend. Not happy with Argento, but hey, it happens. The Postman, our buddy the Postman, was played by Gildo DiMarco.
Mm-hmm.
I tried not to pronounce that like dildo. I'm sorry. But he played Garulo in The Bird of Crystal Plumage.
He sure did.
The stuttering pimp named Solong.
Solong.
Solong. Did you have any other trivias you wanted to drop on this thing?
No, I kind of dropped him there in the film while we were talking about it.
Nice.
I know, oddly enough, so I guess maybe because it was a Universal film, that there was critical reaction.
Yes.
Wikipedia.
Oh, boy.
Wikipedia's got some... Everybody hated it.
Yeah. It's a bummer, man.
Yeah, Fran Lebowitz, who had a column reviewing bad movies, told Glenn O'Brien in a 1978 issue of High Times that the worst movie I ever saw was called Four Flies on Grey Velvet with Mimsy Farmer, one of your great loves. But to this day, I have never seen a worse movie.
What an idiot.
Yeah, because to say it's the worst movie ever?
What a fool.
I mean, that's... Roger Ebert hated it, but he hated everything.
He said that Mimsy Farmer deserves to get those Mia Farrow roles. I like that.
Yeah, and Mia Farrow's doing horror films.
Yep.
Gene Siskel gave the film 1 star out of 4 and wrote, Argento's script contains more red herrings than the Cape Cod Room. I don't even know what the Cape Cod Room is.
I'm following that link. It is a restaurant in the Drake Hotel.
See, Siskel, we don't know what you're talking about, and neither do you.
Nope. Don't care for it. Don't care for it. It's fine. And you know what? I get it. Argento is one of the most polarizing people within his own fandom. Like, every film is his last great film. Every film is underrated. I mean, excuse me, overrated. Every film is just garbage, except for, you know, whichever ones you love.
Yeah.
And that's fine. That's fine.
How's the new one going to be?
Hey, I have heard mixed things. I've read two. Right? I've read two quick reviews that were just tweets that were short, you know, one or two sentences. And one guy was like, thank God, Dracula 3D wasn't his last film. This is a much more fitting final film if he retires or sadly passes away.
Sure.
Another person said it's a return to form and they really loved it. And I've read a lot of other negative reviews, and I am one of those people who my expectations are in the toilet. For my own sanity, I like it until I'm proven otherwise, which is, you know, I would like it to be better than Giallo. I would like it to be better than Dracula 3D.
Uh-huh.
And I can't say I hated either of those films. They're very Bucky Like a Bronco movies.
Rocky Like a Hurricane.
I mean, Giallo fell for the torture porn thing.
Oh, boy.
Once you get out the pliers and the blowtorch or whatever the torture implements were, I'm out. I got to bail.
Mm.
And then Dracula 3D it's the budget is so paltry that the big imagination is completely hamstrung. By, you know, they can't even have a train station set. It is the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life is the train station, the CGI, Birdemic level train station where it looks like a photograph of a train station with a green screen door cut out so people can exit from a closet that is supposed to be a train, like...
So,
hey,
you know, hey. I saw Dracula 3D and I saw Giallo and I have no memory of either.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the issue I have too with Giallo. It's not other than the stuff I complained about, it is not memorable.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, I've even come around to The Card Player and that was one of my worst of the whole genre. And now I'm like, you know what? This is the mecca of internet poker. So what?
It really is. I just always compare it to, like, had he made a Giallo about Pokemon or something.
Ooh, I wish. You know? Yep. Because somebody, I think it might have been, I forget what
review. Babies.
Yeah. Some reviewer, it's to be about Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some reviewer compared it to it being, like, Argento's CSI. And I was like, ooh, yeah, but, yeah. That's not good either.
Yeah. So, no.
How do you feel about Four Flies on Grey Velvet, dude?
I like it. I think that The Bird with the Crystal Plumage and Four Flies on Grey Velvet unfairly push The Cat of Nine Tails down. Because The Bird with the Crystal Plumage is the Giallo's Halloween. It's not the first Giallo, but it's the one that popularized them.
Totally.
And then Four Flies on Grey Velvet was the lost film for so long. In fact, the Shameless disc says the lost Giallo of Dario Argento.
Wow.
So I think that being first and being lost unfairly kind of pushes The Cat of Nine Tails down, which I really like. But I do really like it. Also, I think maybe if we had a Blu-ray, if somebody went in... somebody else, maybe other than Shameless, even were to do a Blu-ray Arrow or Vinegar Syndrome or somebody, I think that when Kill Baby Kill did not have a Blu-ray, if you were to have a Bobathon and you'd watch Blu-ray, 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 and then you'd watch DVD, and Blu-ray, 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 and it would always lower the DVD,
right?
Because everything else was so vibrant.
Yep.
So I think that it would even help Four Flies on Grey Velvet more to have a Blu-ray. And maybe the Shameless disc, maybe that's the one to get.
Hey.
I think he originally wanted one of the Beatles to play the part. And of course, now that just... Maybe then that didn't sound ridiculous. Now it kind of sounds ridiculous.
Yeah. He had Terrence Stamp in mind. And he had Ringo Starr in mind.
Yeah.
I think that would have been wild.
I mean, can you imagine if we were talking about a giallo that had one of the Beatles?
Hey.
You know, as the star.
You know, and if it was Ringo, it would be so funny. Because yes. Ringo, for my money, was always the funniest.
Sure.
He would just react to things and I would lose my mind. So.
Yes. In fact, I think he's the best Beatle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot of people are coming around to him. He was considered such a terrible drummer for so long. It's like, now he's great.
No. Yeah. And he is the one that I don't hate. I don't hate any of them, but like John was kind of sanctimonious and George was kind of holier than thou and Paul's kind of a smart aleck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally.
But anyway.
I love Four Flies and Grey Velvet. I don't reach for it as often. I watch The Cat of Nine Tails the most. Mm. I think out of everything in Argento's filmography, other than Suspiria, I think Cat of Nine Tails is still my most watched. It's just because I can just disappear into that movie. I don't know why. But Four Flies, in yes, its mythical status of just it being so hard to find, even though I have a perfectly acceptable copy of it, still feels like this movie I don't believe I own, you know. But yeah, I adore it. I can't think of anything really to say to diss on it at all. Like, there's just something magical about it. I think Bird with the Crystal Plumage, I want to say the reason that one's the lowest might be because of Susie Kendall.
You're not a Susie Kendall fan. And
no.
Long time listeners know that.
Yeah, I love Torso, but she's my least favorite part of Torso.
Mm-hmm.
And she is that movie's heart. She does seem to care about her friends the most. But I don't understand her in Bird with the Crystal Plumage at all. I'm trying to think of... I do love her in Spasmo. Because
yes,
everyone in Spasmo is so weird.
Yeah.
I think I like her in the Devil's Garden.
Yeah, I like that one.
That's a very... It's a very upsetting film because of its content and its subject matter, but I think it's really good.
I like it.
Yeah.
British giallo.
So, Brad, we have talked about Four Flies and Grey Velvet. We have talked about, like, kind of ranking in the trilogy there of the animal trilogy. Are we ready to put those little flies to bed in their red velvet pillows?
I think so. I think so.
Look at that, folks. We set a record. It only took us 7 or 8 years to wrap up that episode.
I'm telling you, because I said to Richard, did we do all the animal trilogy? And he said, we did two of them one night. And then you got tired, you wussy.
No, we were doing a marathon. This is back when we still sat around for between 4 and 6 hours to do a 3-hour episode.
Yes,
and we were way over time, and it was just too much, and we bailed, and by God, we came back to it.
We came back with a vengeance.
Yes, a gray velvet vengeance. A vengeance.
Vengeance.
Woo! Almost fell out of my chair. Look at that.
I'm telling you.
Man, it's chair dropping. We do have a little feature, though. We're going to do something called the matinee of the imagination, I want to call it.
I love that.
It's we do a double feature to spark your mind up, bro.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
Would you like to go first for this matinee of the imagination tonight?
I would love to do the matinee of the imagination first.
Yeah.
I'm going to do something that is just, you're never going to see it coming.
Yeah.
I think a double feature, a great one, would be the 1971 proto-slasher Blood and Lace. Whoa, not the Mario Bava film, but Blood and Lace.
Beautiful. I just watched that for the first time.
You did. It's got a beautiful Blu-ray.
Yeah.
I would double that with a recent film. A recent film.
Uh-oh.
You're never going to see this coming.
No, dude. Go for it.
The Rental.
That's brilliant. That's
and I don't really want to say why they go well together. I just let the viewer find out on their own. But I think that would make a great double feature.
Dude on a stick. That's incredible.
Yeah. There's some similarities there. I don't want to say what,
mm-hmm.
but I think that would make a great double feature.
Yeah, I just did. I did the rental. Just out of the blue. So it was almost the same day. It may have been the day before. I think I watched Blood and Lace, mm-hmm. and then the next night I watched The Rental. And I gotta say, it got a little too close for a home invasion for me.
Gotcha.
But it did not break me in that regard. I hate to say, I've kind of lost touch with like The Strangers,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. Not because because I own a home. You know, and you know, in these trying times,
Elizabeth, like, had I told her this is a home invasion film, she might have grumbled.
Yeah,
she's not as big a fan. She loves You're Next.
Yes, that is.
That's about as close.
See,
we can watch The Strangers every so often.
Yeah, The Strangers is the tough one for me because you know it's actually a home invasion. The Strangers 2. Has just mm-hmm. a scene or two of home invasion. Your Next ends up being more than home invasion. So I can make these excuses for those.
Well, as let me bring something up.
Sure.
Our friend of the show, Mark, was telling me the other day that he picked up X on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And him and I have talked about before of our love, mine and his, for The Strangers Pray at Night. And I did not realize that the dad in The Strangers Pray at Midnight is in X as the pornographic honcho.
Holy shit.
So he's in both, in two of the best slashers of the last 30 years.
Holy shit, that's incredible.
Martin Henderson, I did not realize that. Now, I knew he's the boyfriend in the American version of The Ring.
Holy shit.
And I did know that.
I did not know that.
Yes, but I did not realize he was... Yeah, he is in... I mean, X is just a wonderful...
Yeah, dude.
Wonderful slasher. Yeah. And so is... I think The Strangers Pray at Night. It's just so sad that it didn't go anywhere.
Got to have a good crowd for X. We had we got real lucky.
Good.
We have a cheap night on Tuesdays here at our theater. And apparently that was the raucous, horrible experience. Because unfortunately... Unlike a lot of films nowadays, X is very quiet. Mm-hmm. In between all the horror, there's lots of quiet, you can hear a pin drop moments.
Mm-hmm.
And the crowd mm-hmm. I had on the regular night, sorry to be Mr. Snooty, was you could hear a pin drop. In fact, the jokes, I was the only one who laughed out loud at the jokes. Wow. Everybody was scared to make a noise in that theater. But apparently the night before, my buddy saw it. And she said it was a total nightmare. People were yelling at the movie, talking on their phone, bringing in bags of food.
Why would they go see a movie and just act like a fool?
Because it's cheap night. That's the half price.
I guess.
You know.
Yeah.
I never go that night anymore because it just...
Yeah, I don't blame you.
The best experience I had with that was for... That kind of night was for Hellfest.
Yes.
My buddy Jason and I went on a Tuesday night, and it was half price tickets. This is pre-pandemic, and it was a madhouse. We were there 25 minutes early, and we got in line for concessions, get some snacks, get a drink. Uh-huh. 3 minutes before the movie started, we had to bail on the line.
Ugh.
So we were in line for over 20 minutes, and I had to get some water from the water fountain so I wouldn't be coughing during the film, and then it was completely packed, the whole theater full, and people loved Hellfest, but if they were having like issues and being loud, you can't tell, because Hellfest is a loud ass movie.
It really is.
Woo, dude,
it really is.
So speaking of going to a theater for a matinee, I have my double feature. Dude, yours was incredible.
Please.
Mind-bending in the best way. I wouldn't have thought of that.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I've got a little crazy double feature here. I think it's crazy. First up, Umberto Lenzi's Nightmare Beach.
Ooh.
The slasher by way of giallo. So a master of the giallo trying to make a slasher and being very successful and hilarious at it.
Yes.
Nightmare Beach is a classic. Can't recommend it enough.
I like it.
So you think you're going to go home, but you find out there's one more movie. What could it be? It's The Devil's Men from 1976. The Greek horror movie called Land of the Minotaur.
I still not have seen that.
With Donald Pleasance and Peter Cushing.
Yes.
And they're both very confused. I don't think they know what the fuck is going on.
Wow.
But I recommend Land of the Minotaur. It's, you know, my birth year. I'm a big freaking 1976 guy.
Yeah, you are.
And let me find it. Oh, it's not coming up on The Devil's Men. There it is. But you know what's so funny? When you type up Land of the Minotaur, it comes up as The Devil's Men. Go figure.
Amazing.
This is from a Greek director named Kostas Karagiannis. So if you're a fan of the Greek episode of Inspector Morse called Beware Greeks Bearing Gifts, you'll love this one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
right.
The director, Kostas, is also the star. He plays the hero.
Wow.
And he's got some, I think he does some like Greek kung fu moves to save the day. I forget.
Heck yeah.
But dude, this movie's totally crazy. Totally crazy.
It's I've got a DVD. They doubled it with Norman J. Warren's Terror, but I just haven't got around to seeing it.
Which I have done that double feature, and it's magical.
Wow.
Woo. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yep. Yep. But yeah, our pal Kostas Karagiannis, director of, hold on, this is blowing my mind here. Was he not the director? Folks, I apologize. Hold on, let me do it. Let me do a little Control F here.
Control F.
I'm the guy who does that. Okay, I'm sorry.
I don't even know what it means.
So the director is Kostas Karagiannis. The star, after Pleasance and Peter Cushing, Kostas Karagiorgis. It is one syllable difference.
Wow.
So I want to pretend they're the same guy, but I can't because I don't know. But Kostas Karagiannis, the director, 178 films.
Amazing.
Most of them straight to video.
Straight to video.
Whatevs. I can live with that. So yeah, there's my double feature.
Amazing.
Thank you.
I love it. I need to see Land of the Minotaur.
Do it. Mm. Make sure you watch The Devil's Men cut, though, brother.
Oh, of course.
Or The Devil's Men uncut. Wowie, wow, wow.
Wow, wow.
So, folks, thanks for joining us. Brad, thank you for talking to me, dude.
Thank you for having me, for letting me be here to talk to you.
Dude, this is the good times.
Let the good times roll.
Yes, let them roll right out the door.
That's right.
Bye, folks.
Bye-bye.
Folks, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you'd like to write into the show, send an email to doomedmoviethon@gmail.com or hit us up at doomedmoviethon on Instagram or at doomedmoviethon on Twitter or at doomedmoviethon at Discord or go to Hello This Is The Doomed Show on Facebook and message us there. If you want more Hello This Is The Doomed Show, go to doomedmoviethon.com and click the podcast button for the archive, or go to YouTube and look up Doomed Moviethon and you'll find the classic episodes of Hello, This Is the Doomed Show. And if that's still not enough, I have written some books, you know, about my love of movies over on Amazon.com. Just look up Richard Glenn Schmidt and you'll find Giallo Meltdown, A Moviethon Diary, Giallo Meltdown 2, Cinema Somnambulist, or Doomed Moviethon, the book. Hello, This is the Doom Show is a proud member of the Legion Podcast Network. Go to legionpodcast.com and check out the other great shows over there.